He managed to keep his troll at bay by individually blocking him from public view. Turns out that is a solution, as they say in the online world, that scales. Ta-Nehisi Coates, senior editor at The Atlantic, has a blog that draws visitors both for the posts and the extremely engaging comment section because, Coates says, he moderates the daylights out of it. The jerks are invited to leave, the grown-ups to stay and chime in. Back in 2011, we discussed the intellectual treasure that is the non-trollish commenter community.
I always tell people it's like a dinner party, and I try to host it that way. I try to keep the conversation interesting. In terms of what is the bane of all comment sections, and that is, you know, rude commentary, people going over the line, trolling, that sort of thing, I generally follow the same rules. So I always tell people, if you were in my house and you insulted one of my guests, I would ask you to leave. I don't understand why it would be any different in a comment section.
Well, the criticism against that sort of policing is that it's anti-democratic and that it somehow undermines the diversity of opinion and thought and so forth.
It does all of those things. It does all those things. But the beauty of the web is that whatever my comment section is, it's not the internet. So if that's not what you want, you can go somewhere else. The web is open. The web is free. It's only in this particular corner that it is, in fact, totalitarian, anti-democratic. there is no – the diversity of opinion is rather small. I would certainly cop to that.
So what can't I do on your blog that I can do in the comments section of the more free-for-all variety?
You can't call people names. I mean, you can't say, listen, you idiot. You can't change the topic because you don't like the discussion. It's like you're more curating comments. So what you're trying to do is present a conversation that's interesting, not for everyone, but for a certain small group of people. But I don't have like a code of conduct for what people can do. But it's very instinctive to me. I was tempted to make the pornography argument to say, I don't know what it is, but when I see it, I know what it is. My only criteria is that you have a civil, interesting conversation.
Now, this does not take no time. How much do you invest in keeping the conversation civil and directed?
Too much. Way too much. And more than I ever expected. I invest at least as much time in curating and in hosting as I do in actual writing. It can get really, really hectic. Blogging will burn you out, period. I think blogging plus having to curate definitely is a load. And I'm of the mind that it's not something that somebody should do for the rest of their life.
So you're, you know, somewhere in an inner circle of hell. You have a blog but no time. Do you open one door in which there is no comment section because you haven't the resources to deal with it? Or do you open the other, which is the unmoderated fray, and just let the chips fall where they may?
I'm going with no comments. I wouldn't even hesitate. This is just in terms of my opinion. An unmoderated fray is no comments.
Now, there is the blog, which I guess is the point of departure for the discussion. Mm-hmm. And then there's the commentator's weigh in.
Right.
Are they separate things, or is the actual product the blog plus the commentary inexorably intertwined?
To me, it is a whole thing. For many years before I wrote for the web, I wrote for print. And in general, there weren't comments. There were letters to the editor that people curated. And when I started reading blogs for the first time, and even in newspapers, when they would publish online, they would open up their comment sections. You would have this thoroughly researched, or at least an attempt at a thoroughly researched piece. And below it, you would have the worst sort of ad hominem, the worst back and forth. Your mother's this, you did this, you black this and that. It was as though you went to an art museum and, you know, some kid had scrawled below the picture, you know, Mikey was here or something like that. I mean, it really actually detracted from the content of the piece. And I look at the commentary below the blog post as content. I look at it as a space where people spend their time after they finish reading whatever I've written. So to me, it is a whole thing.
Sometimes I so want to answer back the commenters, and I write something, shall we say, pointed, and have to struggle with myself mm-hmm. not to hit send. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And sometimes I fail in that struggle and I get involved in a back and forth that I just don't want to be a part of.
Right.
When do you hit delete and when do you hit send?
So I hit send far too much. The first job I ever had in journalism, we would publish, as most newspapers or magazines or whatever do, letters to the editor that were dissents. The publication I was at, they didn't allow writers to respond. And the point was, you had the gun, you had the platform, you had the cannon. Are you so petty that you have to go back and forth with somebody in the letters section in addition to already having to write as long as you got to write? I always try to remember that I have the cannon. I very often forget that, though. And if I go over the line, if I say something too mean, I apologize for it. And worse is sometimes you're actually wrong. And I guess this is the value to answering, right? To answering when people come after you. I've gone back and forth on 20 responses, then at the end realized, you know what, I was wrong. And then had to write a post about why I was wrong. I don't think people expect you to be perfect, but I do think they want you to be honest.
Far be it from me to give you advice, but in future, don't be wrong.
Easier said than done.
Ta-Nehisi, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ta-Nehisi Coates is a senior editor and blogger at The Atlantic.